Welcome to the perfect triangle. The perfect triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And now, the perfect, triangle.
It's very unfortunate that this other child decided to make a bad choice that's going to affect him for the rest of his life. I have compassion for every human being. I want to make this very clear. This is not a race issue. This is not a black and white issue. I don't want someone stepping up on a soapbox trying to politicize this. I don't appreciate some of the remarks I've seen online that people say there was this fight and they don't know, they weren't there.
Never again will 1.5 million Jewish children be turned into soap and ash and lampshades. Never again!
Upon closer examination, one can see how Bikini Bottom is an allegory for the destiny of Faustian Europe. Squidward clearly represents the Apollonian Aryan man, stern, cultured, full of the creative Hyperborean soul and solar aristocratic character. And yet there is a tragic aspect to his character, in that his spiritual and creative passions are given no place in the degenerate modernistic kosher bacchanal that is modern Crabs Run Bikini Bottom. SpongeBob represents the Dionysian aspect of Aryan culture. He is the unawakened Gentile who has succumbed to cultural Marxist brainwashing, always maintaining a cheerful, carefree demeanor, and yet fawning and servile before the Semitic crustacean power structure. Patrick represents the indoctrination of the primitive Negroidic blood into the formerly white, pure ethnos. He is an utter buffoon, an unproductive, antisocial drain on society. And yet, the good Goa SpongeBob has been conditioned to accept his friendship, unaware of how his own way of life is gradually succumbing to the platonic subterranean Negroid elements. As I'm sure we're all aware, well aware, Mr. Krabs represents the eternal merchant himself, as while not only a filthy money grubber, it is shown in season 1, episode 12, that he is pushing race mixing upon the racially unaware SpongeBob by trying to set him up on a date with his ball-busting hinta whale daughter Pearl. Clearly, the show was ahead of its time.
Never again will 1.5 million Jewish children be turned into soap and ash and lampshades. Never again!
We are a people that has been kicked out of every place we've ever lived for 2,000 years. Every single place.
But that is the inevitable ultimate goal of the Jew in his revolution. And this aim he must pursue. He knows well enough his economics brings no blessing. His is no master people. He is an exploiter. The Jews are a people of robbers. He has never founded any civilization. Though he has destroyed civilizations by the hundreds, he possesses nothing of his own creation to which he can point. Everything that he has.
Welcome to Mar-a-Lago, Mr. Fine. Here's that baby you ordered.
Randy, congrats on your big win. We're going to make Israel great again.
Hello, Mr. Fine.
Oh, There's good Jews. Jewry is a race. Jews are a Jews. The only good Jews I know are dead and buried, and I can't wait for the bad Jews to be good Jews. And it's all going to take place, whether you like it or not. Whether you think it's terrible or not, it doesn't matter. My father said they're all going to die. And I think that's marvelous.
I'm Jewish.
No, that's a bit of a problem.
You will read the Talmud. You will worship Saturn. You will be circumcised. You will suck baby dicks. Come on, Goy. Make your mind up, time. Come, be a Shabbos Goy. Huh? This is anti-Semitic. Oy vey.
White America, wake the fuck up. White America, wake the fuck up.
Yes, white America, wake the fuck up. White Canada, wake the fuck up. White Europe, wake the fuck up. Hello, everyone. This is the Perfect Triangle, number 231. It is April 11, 2025. I'm your host, Giuseppe Vaffangulo. And what an honor it is to have the courageous Les Borey join co-host Zach Logos Revealed and I without having to be constantly stepped on by a solipsistic statutory Paul. So welcome, Les and Zach.
Well, thank you.
You guys on. Here we are. There we
Thanks
are.
Thanks very much. Guys.
So, yeah, I mean, you handled it great, but that's what you get. Sometimes statutory fall is sweet as pie. Other times he's quite salty, and he was in one of his salty moods that day. But, I mean, you're going to run into that the bigger you get in your campaign and everything. So how's – let's start out, Les, one of the – and then I'll turn it over to Zach to ask a question. But what I'm curious about is – What exactly are you running for, and what's your plan to put together a campaign manager, a website that accepts donations, and all the traditional steps to run for political office?
Well, I'm running to be a member of Parliament in Canada, and we're just trying to open our bank account even at this late date. Earlier, like years ago, it seemed to have been easier to open bank accounts. But we're having trouble opening accounts and accounts. So we're going to try after the show's over today to open that account. And then I can start to take donations. But I don't expect to take too many. And I think I'm just going to run a simple campaign. And during this campaign, not only am I going to fight this campaign, I'll go shake hands, hand out a couple flyers here and there. But I'm also going to try and start a political party. And I'll do that during this campaign as well. I would have began that already, but we weren't supposed to have this election until September, or the actual election itself wouldn't have happened until October, but that's when the election day would have been. But September is usually when the main body of the election occurs. And they called it early, so I didn't have a chance to organize any sort of a resistance to this. So here I am by myself as an independent candidate. Wait and open a bank account even at this late date. So there's not a whole lot going on. My name's been in the paper associated with my convictions. And people are getting to know me through that somewhat. I don't think they're getting a good look at who I am just by what other people say about me. But they did give me a small opportunity to make a statement. And so I did that. And I'm getting a bit of a fact now, but that's what I did. So I just put things in the paper, and they actually wrote for my suggestions. But they cut one in half. The one where I said I'd back labor with, back in terms of labor, and replace taxation using that method, because labor is civil service is the most valuable commodity in the world right now. So to back currency of labor is best you can have, better than gold, right? So anyway,
oh heck yeah!
They didn't put in the paper replacing taxation with this labor that's worth more than gold. They did state the civil service probably likes that now. I said to the whole country that the labor of the civil service is more than gold. And then the rest of it is for strange reasons. I'm getting a bit of feedback, by the way,
going on. Okay, well, I'm using headphones, and Zach's using headphones. I guess let's just see what happens. Zach, welcome, and what's on your mind speaking with Les Borey?
Yeah, afternoon, G. I think the feedback started when you started screen sharing, because I'm having the thing too.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah, we don't hear from you, but when Les and I talk, it's like a double.
Oh, well, that's – oh, hold on.
It's a little extra.
Okay, well, let me stop the screen sharing. How's that now then? Are you guys – is it any better for you guys?
Testing. Okay. Yes. Much better. Okay. Now it's sane. I can understand myself.
All right.
So getting intruded by my own voice is very odd. yeah. So I'm very curious. You know, starting up a political platform and attempting to do this, which, you know, in America, this is something that's been done with the Libertarian Party and the Green Party. However, they're still very much kind of intertwined with the system itself, right? They have a lot of system promoters and things of that sort. What kind of an avenue are you going with your political party? Is this strictly describing itself as a third party, as like an opposition to a dual party system, or you know, what's kind of your take that you're going to push publicly with the creation of a political party?
Well, we're going to win. That's what we're going for. that's what our goal is. Not just you know, to waste our time and to, you know, be part of this fake system. Right now, we have a one-party system in Canada, and it's the Zionist Communist Party, basically, no matter who they vote for, with small exceptions, I suppose, with other parties. I don't know them very well, so I don't want to smear anything on them if they don't deserve it. But I know that the main parties, for sure, are not on our side. You can tell by their platform points how they don't go after banking and change the basic element of our economy that basically guarantees the certainty of failure. You know, when you have more debt in your economy than money, it kind of guarantees that you're going to lose your house someday. Someone is. And that's not a fair economy, especially in the Western world, right? We don't want to live like that. So this party is definitely going to win. Like, that's what we're planning on doing. Whether this happens or not, it's another matter. It depends on who lives in Canada at the time. So we'll see how things work out. People are starting to wake up to things a little bit. They know that something isn't right, and I'm going to help them connect a few dots. If they allow me to, if they keep me out of jail, which I know they don't want to do. And, you know, we'll see how it goes from there. Basically, I don't know if you guys know yet, if you watched Dave's show this morning, but I made an announcement that the Crown has decided to appeal my sentence. They don't think 3 years in jail for speech violations is long enough. All right, so they're going to try and give me 7 years.
No way. That's disgusting.
I think so. And also, we're going to appeal the actual decision itself. Right? There were 4 convictions. I think I stand pretty solid on 3 of those convictions to have them overturned from what my lawyer tells me. So we'll see how it goes. But at the very least, there'll be more publicity. And while I have the ear of the people, I'm going to use it wisely. So I'm not monkeying around anymore like I did in the past to get their attention. And now it's time to kick it into high gear and really inform people and to let them know that there's going to be a choice for them to vote for, a real choice in the future where things are going to change.
So is this coming from the new Jew rectum licking traitor that was just installed to replace Castro's homosexual son? I mean, I cannot believe that that they're coming after you. I mean, there was no case to begin with. It's just insane. Wow, I'm really angered to hear that, Les. And so you're in Ontario, right? So what would you be running for, a federal office or a
– Yes, a member of parliament.
Okay.
MP. And there's also the member of provincial parliament, which is obviously in the provincial government, the lower legislature. So mm-hmm. I'm running to be in the federal government.
Excellent. So how much support have you garnered from local and regional people? I mean, there's a lot of people in Canada – I know, because we have a lot of regular Canadian viewers and participants in the chat that get what's going on and are just utterly offended by this globalist synagogue of Satan takeover of your country and suppression of God-given rights such as free speech and freedom of assembly and et cetera. So are you starting to see people have had enough and they're going to get behind you?
It's hard to say where the people are going to go with their votes. It depends. Some of them are just so fed up with the other parties, they may vote for me for good reasons. They know why they're doing it. But some people may like what I stand for, but they're trying to play the game where they're playing the two parties off of each other, right? Or actually the people are being played by the two parties.
Uh-huh.
And they feel that they have to support someone who they might not want to vote for just to keep the other guy out. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. If they don't want the liberal, they're going to vote conservative despite the reservations about doing so, because they see it as the only way to stop this this takeover. But what they don't know is that regardless of who they vote for, conservative or liberal, they're going to vote for the same team. Like, people might not know this, but Mark Carney was the Bank of Canada governor under conservative government or Prime Minister Stephen Harper. And Pierre Poilievre was in the government at that time, too. And so was Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada, which is another globalist shill organization, if you ask me, just sucking votes out of people that are misguided. They think that he's actually going to be some sort of a savior or something like that. But they forgot about his past track record, was along with Pierre Poilievre, of how they bailed out the banks in 2008. And Mark Carney was part of that, too. Basically, the banks printed their own bailout and they put on the Canadians tab. And that's not a good thing, right? And people thought that, you know, Harper did a great job. And unless they know what really happened, they claim that we had the best banking system in the world back in the day. But in a short amount of time, they added $235 billion onto our national debt to bail out these banks. And that's not a good thing.
No, not at all.
During that time of Harper's rule, they sold a few Canadian companies to the communist Chinese out in our oil patch. I think it was Nexen and Daylight Energy and the Athabascan Oil Sands or Tar Sands Corporation. They stole these companies to the communist Chinese so they could suck oil out of Canada and, you know, connect the straw to China with a pipeline someday. And that's why I oppose these pipelines going to the West Coast, because I just see it as being another step towards China just extracting oil at will from our country. I don't like that. They shouldn't even be here, like as communists in our country. Individuals, I don't mind. But as far as, en masse, they basically pretty much invited the Chinese army here.
Unbelievable. Zach, why don't you jump in?
Border, by the way, that's why, you know, I mentioned the fact that I like to stave off an invasion from Canada. And these guys are parked on your northern border right now.
Yep, that's exactly right. Zach, jump in.
Yeah, I'm curious. You mentioned that many people are kind of stuck psychologically in this two-party system, voting for the lesser of two evils, so to speak, right? How do you plan to appeal to both sides, what are perceived as sides, right? Obviously, we know that it is a uniparty system, but the people that think they are on one side or the other, how do you plan to appeal to both of these and kind of pull them into one organization or one party?
Well, I'd like to unite them around money and make their lives so much better with good monetary policies that they'd have a hard time not voting for us. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, there aren't too many politicians that are claiming that they can eliminate taxation and still provide people with the best public services that money can even buy, which is what I'd be doing. If all the money in the world will be waiting to be earned into existence by the labor of the civil service, you can see that our future potential is unlimited. It's only limited by what we can create and accomplish with human means, with our minds, with our hands. Other than that, there's no limit to what we can do.
Now, do you see any opportunity, Les, to align or gain some support from the individuals who were involved in the courageous truckers convoy during the lockdown 4 years ago or so? I thought that was inspirational that the Canadian truckers said enough is enough, and then the traitorous dual citizen Diana Vreeland, went after their personal bank accounts and they were just vicious, right? As they always are. And do you think that they, having been slapped down that way, would they be open to your message of National Socialism?
Well, it's not really a message. It's like National Socialism. It's just I don't have a name for it myself. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But it's very similar to that. I'd like to have a bit more free speech than National Socialists did. Also, I'd like them to be able to choose their government a little bit easier than National Socialists did, although I don't like what we're calling democracy these days. You need an honest press for that, or at least an element of the press where people could actually go to that's trusted to see what's going on a little bit. And that's a tough thing to accomplish. But by nationalizing the media, the corporate media here, and starting over again, basically, and removing Zionist and communist elements from it, which is pretty much the same thing, if not the exact same thing, I'd like to give Canadians a chance to learn and to see if they can identify the signs of communism. And if they can, and we're going to teach them as children to do these very things, actually, who knows, maybe they'll only make wiser decisions in the future despite the interference from from foreign players.
Great point. Now, one of the things that I find personally disgusting being raised as a Catholic when it was still a real Catholic religion, not overtaken by crypto Jews, is the idea that, you know, a century ago, there were courageous Catholic priests like Father Coughlin, Dennis Fay, Father Dennis Fay in Ireland, and many others who were coming out against communism, coming out against, you know, championing the white communities that they were a part of. And now at the corporate levels of all the Christian religions, they open up to homosexuals, to child rapists. They, you know, they've got this, they falsely interpret, what the real message of Christ, which was not, you know, kumbaya communism and love everybody. I mean, it's all been subverted by the vile kike, and it's disgusting to me that you see these, Catholic organizations funded, non-government organizations funded by Jewish money, you know, bringing in all these third world illegal aliens, these MUDs and these Africans. And it's just it's a bigger problem in America, but in the United States rather, but it's still going on in Canada as well. And what do you view as the betrayal of modern Christianity to what should be, you know, its white foundation, but they want donations and they want sheep following them. And a lot of the Africans really, really jump into Christianity and think it's great. And, you know, that anyway, you get where I'm going. So what's your thoughts on somehow reaching out to real Christians, real Catholics who are being forced to open their own churches and, you know, led by excommunicated Monsignors and bishops and the like? And I mean, there are many good people at the local and community level still are actual Christians, not this kumbaya communism nonsense. And so do you have any thoughts on reaching out to them?
Well, it's a tough thing to do. Every Sunday they go and they listen to the sermons, right?
Right.
And, you know, if those sermons counter what we're saying, it's going to be difficult to reach those people. It's because they trust the people that they see every day. They've got social networks built up, and, you know, no one wants to lose their friends or be excommunicated, not just from the church, but from a social group, right? So sometimes people's beliefs seem to be tied in with who they hang around, and not always, it's not always seems like it's based on just purely, you know, evidence from free will that leads them to their conclusions. So I'm not sure what to do with these people. I basically, or how to address them. I'd like to remind them that maybe if they are led by some kind of people that were harming children in the worst possible ways, besides even just killing them. I mean, just, you know,
right.
Leaving a child alive after they've done these things to them guarantees a lifetime of suffering, I would think.
Yes.
And that's pretty nasty stuff. I think that maybe they should look at that one lesson from Jesus about the millstone and then, you know, really give it a good thought. You know, just think about what they're doing, who they're associating with, and what Jesus thinks of people like that. Maybe that's what would, you know, you'd have to, I think, relate to them on a level that Jesus would relate to them on, because that's, they're supposed to be following Jesus. So you'd have to equate it with one of his teachings, I think, to make them change.
Great points. Zach, want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm curious, just for your personal take on the church as an institution. You know, obviously, like you said, a lot of people are getting preached to these evangelical kind of Christian ideals, which are preaching that Israel is God's chosen people, all of this complete, utter nonsense that we know is nonsense. But how do you plan to actually address publicly, you know, the institutions as a whole? Do you want to do that more covertly, or do you plan to kind of be more upfront about how corrupt the institution itself is?
I was just going to circumvent the whole issue and try to bring more people together without alienating them. If I tell people how to improve their lives, and I give them a list of the symptoms that are harming us right now, I think people can figure a few things out over time, especially when you explain how the simple solutions will make their lives better. And they're not complicated solutions. The more simple something is, the more, you know, the less you're really hiding, I would think, because it's right out in front of people. It's very simple. We don't have a whole book of bank regulations to bring into play. It's just a simple matter of lending money and backing it with human labor, or printing the money after human labor if it's from the civil service, you know, a pay stub. And then obviously we owe them that money for labor that they've done. So we'll print the money, and that money that we just printed is worth more than gold. So I'd like to see those puffy-chested conservatives kind of argue that down. I don't think they can do it, especially when you ask them how the gold got here, and the answer is labor. Have a nice day. Thanks for coming out. You know, so that's how it's going to be. Simple stuff. Simple stuff, guys. Simple stuff. No hocus pocus. No hidden messaging. Just right at the people. I think they'll appreciate that. And I'm going to play this smart. There's no point in going picking a fight where there isn't a fight. So commenting on people's religions, generalizing is not really a good thing to do. You know what I mean? It's better just to talk to everybody on the same level. Now, if a certain instance comes up here and there, whatever, we can talk about things. I'm not afraid to answer questions. But to go out and to, you know, start kicking hornet's nests for no good reason isn't a smart thing to do politically. We're going to win, guys. I'm telling you, we're going to go for a win here. We're not fooling around.
That's excellent. I think that's a very savvy choice. Now, I'm not intimately familiar with Canadian federal law. Was there ever a time in Canada where free speech was codified, much the way in America, in the United States, rather, you have the First Amendment?
I don't recall that. They say that we have the right to express ourselves and speak freely in our Constitution, but that Constitution's not worth as much as the people that, you know, run our government, right? Your Constitution is only worth as much as the people that you elect. So I don't want to make any connections or equations as to what these people are worth, but they're not worth much. I'll say that. I'll keep it polite. That's what it is.
There you go. So now, how did you feel when did you get a letter from the Crown, or did they contact your attorney and he let you? So what happened? Lay it out for us, because, I mean, to me, they had no case to begin with, and they essentially kept you in prison for nearly 2 years without charging you. Isn't that correct? So it's just absurd what they did.
I was charged with, I think it was five offenses. And later on, about 4 months later, I got charged with two more offenses by the Attorney General of Canada, of all things. All right. I got charged with, advocating for genocide against Jews, and I got charged with incitement of hatred 2.0, where I'd already been charged by the provincial attorney general, as far as I know, for incitement of hatred 1.0, right? So yeah. Anyhow, we'll see how it goes. If I beat the charges that I think will beat, I'll beat all the original charges that the police charged me for and the advocating for genocide one. I'll have to eat the incitement of hatred against Jews 2.0, but it's what it is. I mean, even if I lose all the charges, I mean, it's still unfortunate, but I think we will win. I think we'll win on the three. We should. My lawyer says technically I'm not guilty of those, so technically I should win. So we'll see how it goes.
Oh, great. Man, I'll tell you, this relentless onslaught by these vile kikes to erode the rights. And it astounds me that all the crown countries, England, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, just have just not put up a fight against these international Jews. And it's just, you know, and all these countries have a dramatic white majority. I just don't understand the disconnect in their minds that they're so willing to give up their country to these globalist parasites and not like hit the streets and demand a government that serves the population, not serves the international Jew. So why do you think the crown countries such as Canada aren't really taking back their tradition and their rights?
Well, they used a couple of the most powerful weapons of war against us. That's why. I think that's what started this, but we're coming back from it. basically the lie is the most powerful weapon of war of all time, if you ask me. And also the second most powerful weapon, as we've learned in the last little while, is shame, be it for real reasons or otherwise, right? Just perceive shame. You know, if you're at a supermarket and someone yells something bad at you, like rapist or something like that, you know, even if you're innocent, you're going to say, holy smokes, you know, it's not me. You know, don't look at me, the shame, right? It's not a good thing. So shame is a powerful, powerful tool. That's why they invented the term Holocaust denier. It's to incite hatred and shame on people. Yeah, it's what it is. Otherwise, they'd call you a Holocaust non-believer. Like I said in court, they said, are you a Holocaust denier? I said, no, I'm a Holocaust non-believer. Right? I said that, you know, to make a point.
That's a great point. I mean, yeah, the way they weaponize language is just outrageous. And again, the average citizen just doesn't understand the sophisticated nature of all these attacks. I mean, even, you know, the idea that you've got this worldwide use of this nonsense word, anti-Semitism. And actually, I'm pro-Semitism because the Semites are the Palestinians. And it was just proven in the last year, a massive study by Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, pointed out that 97.5% of all the Israeli Jews currently ensconced in Palestine have no genetic tie to the land. And they don't, you know, yet they consider themselves Semites. It's very, very bizarre. But I mean, my favorite six-word aphorism of all time, the Russian proverb, fish swim, birds fly, Jews lie. And it's never been more obvious than now, right? So I don't know. You would have thought with the way things went with the scamdemic that Canadians would have had enough. I mean, they did, you know, more so than Americans. The trucker convoy protest was very inspirational, and you didn't see anything like that in the United States, sadly. But hopefully you can tap into that spirit and be the underdog who gets this popular wave of support. So do you have any inkling of that? Are anybody reaching out to you and say, man, enough is enough, I'm backing you? Are you getting anybody locally to join your team?
I haven't stepped outside of my circle of friends for a while. And the regular public, they just go about their business. I don't think they're aware of too many things that are going on. I get enough smiles out in the public. Like I say hi to people. I don't even tell them who I am. I don't say where I'm running. I just go do my business, you know, get my groceries and things like that. The actual campaign's going to start, you know, in a bit once we get our bank account open. But, you know, the people at the door didn't seem too worried about me. But an inkling of change, I get the odd honking every once in a while. People who know where I live, they'll honk and, you know, just to greet me. I hear that. I take it as a positive thing. So I used to have lawn signs and people used to drive by and see them. I've actually met people that have seen my lawn signs. I've met them in jail. I've met them on the street. And they, you know, they don't mind. They don't seem to say anything bad to me about them. One guy was on my porch. He was actually in tears saying I was doing what he was afraid to do. This was way before I went to jail. It's amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I got 490 votes, which is a small amount, but it's a pretty big amount for an independent candidate to get in Canada during the last provincial election before I went to jail. So that was something else. That was the highest outcome I've ever gotten with the least amount of effort. I just put a sign out and that was all it was. So that's really encouraging. But we need thousands of votes. We don't just need hundreds, but it is encouraging. And I believe that I have enough support now after I've been to jail to start a party now. I do believe we have that. And I'm gonna start working towards that. Like I said, I'm just trying to do the basic things right now, is just open a bank account for our election. I've got my official agent there working on that. We're both going to go down there today to the bank and see if we can't open an account. We have to go to a separate bank today to do that, not even our normal bank. Our normal bank gave us a phone number, but it was too hard to get through. And when someone finally got through, they said it's a 5 to 10 day wait to open an account for this thing. So we're going to try and get it done earlier by going today. If not, we're going to wait the 5 to 10 days and see if we can't get it done then. We've got just over 2 weeks left to go until till election day. So we have that long to open an account. These things shouldn't take this long. It should be very quick, right? But, you know, this is Canada. This is a communist system. You know, and then things go with the communist system, right? There's symptoms and we're living, you know, with these symptoms, right?
Yeah. So,
and democracy is not a strong point of the communist system. I know that.
Yeah, they lie and say they're democracies, but as we well know, democracy is just a pathway to totalitarian control and global communism. And yeah, it's funny, all these young idiots, these white woke types who think communism is such a panacea, they really haven't done their research, because if any of our countries were actually fully communist, they would be the first ones to be removed from the streets as a threat to the leadership. So it's just, and every communist country has always effectively murdered anywhere from 5 to hundreds of millions of its citizens. So, I mean, I don't see how these young people can be so dumb, but yet they are. So,
yeah, they got to learn a lesson about history here and there, but unfortunately, it's been throttled, right? All these sites and things like that. It's hard to find good information out there.
Right.
I looked up, what was it the other day? Something about the Holocaust or something like that. And it was just amazing. It was just pages on pages of information that I don't agree with. You know, and I'll say it like that because there's a law in Canada.
Of course.
And, it took a while to get to anything that was even half decent, something I thought would be helpful for people. So it's amazing out there.
Well, what's really stunning is back in the 80s, Ernst Zundel was a Canadian citizen, and he was doing exceptional work exposing the lies of the Holocaust. And I said that, not less. And look at what they did to him. It's amazing how, especially in Canada, the power of B'nai B'rith is just something else, right? And I don't know. Doesn't make sense. Zach, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm really curious because, you know, as obviously we've discussed, they're going to be smearing you and calling you all kinds of extremist and a vile anti-Semite and all these different terms they're going to be using.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans for your own media apparatus or some way to publicly combat, you know, what they're going to be calling you and really make an actual platform for yourself, right? Because obviously their media is massive and omnipotent at the moment. Do you have a way to kind of combat that moving forward at all?
Yeah, just try to show people what my good nature is and run on a platform of honesty and goodness and mean it. Also, word of mouth is going to be a big thing in this. Also, they're helping somewhat, to tell you the truth, by putting me in the paper so often. People are starting to learn my name. They're definitely curious. I would think they're curious to hear what I have to say, because they haven't given me hardly any chance to, you know, to say anything at all. And they certainly didn't mention the fact that I was in jail for basically standing up for the country against the entire New World Order. And that's where all these charges stemmed from my criticism and my suggestions about how to become free. And despite what I said, I didn't expect people to actually come to my house with their guns and ammo and go on safari. You know what I mean? So there's there's no intent there for any kind of a crime. So technically, I'm innocent as far as I know.
Wow.
Excuse me.
Well, the let's say hello. I can't link because it created an echo. That's weird. That hadn't done that in a while. But let's say hello to everybody in the chat. Dave, my buddy down the road, straight out of Swampton's here. Crystal Knight, Lisa from Germany is here, expressing her opinions. A lot of cool memes being put up by the Crystal Knight. Let's see who else is here. Spy Hunter, another host on FTJ. Great to see Spy Hunter. Huntress is here, another host as well. Bitter Ball, that's a new one. Haven't seen you before. Welcome. Always Honest, the co-host with Davis Lerman on Thursdays. Thank you for the donation, $20. Very much appreciated. Night Wolf is here. Josh Who's here, our technical guru. And Flack 88, greetings. Thomas Dwyer, great to see you. He's a regular. All right, and maybe we'll try again after the top of the hour, see if we can link and be able to promote stuff. But if not, we'll just engage in a normal conversation. So, you know, it's interesting, Les, when I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the 60s and 70s, there was a tale of around the end of the 19th century, there were some really evil robber baron, rich types, and they would work children, 12 to 16 hours a day to their death for pennies, for the effort. They were toxically polluting what was a beautiful, area in, right on Lake Michigan. And there was an uprising. There was a riot about the labor and the pollution and the ownership. I think it was like the late 19th century. It might have been the first decade of the 20th century. I'd have to look it up, but it doesn't matter. There was a massive riot, and the ownership sent in the Pinkertons, and they killed about, I think it was 17 and wounded, almost 100 people. And the citizenry was so outraged that there was one fella, a German guy, who was, believed in German socialism, right? Which is, in a high trust society is an excellent form of government. So he started out running on the platform of German socialism and fair labor, cleaning up the pollution and yada, yada. And it took him 12 years. He kept running, and finally he was elected. And then he made the common council, then he ran for mayor. He was elected, and eventually they got power, and they developed they implemented fair labor laws. They created an unbelievable park system, cleaned up the whole area, and showed that even in the United States you could have an effective German socialist government that was fair to ownership. That the fears were they would nationalize or take over the government. The local government would take over the businesses, and they didn't. They supported it, and there was literally a golden age in Milwaukee for like 20 years where they cleaned it up, mass beautiful park system, people worked hard, everybody made money. And so why I'm sharing that with you is I could see this happening for you, where the first election or two you're considered an outlier, but then as more and more people are waking up to the Jewish overreach in far as suppressing speech and trying to create the lies of the Holocaust, again, my words, not Les's, into like a codified religion, basically. And you're seeing that here in the United States. But do you see yourself in it for the long haul? And eventually, like you said moments ago, you've got almost 500 votes for no campaigning, really. So that's encouraging. And I guess my question is, do you think you've hit upon, the pulse of the angry, disenfranchised Canadian, such that they your 500 votes will turn into 5,000 or 50,000?
It may not be in this election, but I see it coming. I definitely see that coming. Yeah, most certainly. It's time, and I've been at this for 15 years, just about. This mm-hmm. fall will be 15 years of running for office.
Mm-hmm.
So my name is getting out there. And like I said, they've helped by putting my name out, even with this crazy set of charges that I was convicted of. You know what I mean? So, no publicity is bad publicity, they say, but it's what you do with it that matters. And I am making good use of this newfound publicity, this awareness of my presence in politics. And we'll see what happens in the future. Like you asked me before how I intend to pursue it a little further. Now, one thing I didn't mention is when I start the party, then we'll have a website at that point. Right now, I'm just trying to claw back my internet presence. And I've done that now just to avoid any future charges. My work is still out there. Other people have mirrored it. So there's not much I can do about that, which is fine. And I never encouraged people to do that, as far as I know. So that's mm-hmm. good. It's not my fault that it's out there. And I'm glad a lot of people know about what's going on. So every little bit's going to help to change people's minds. Obviously, the people that know what we think we know, and I'm pretty sure we know what we know, they're going to support me, I'm sure, almost without exception. And I'm not sure how many people like that there are in this town. It's hard to say. in the next 2.5 weeks, we're going to find out a lot of things. Now, when we see the results of the election come in, and we'll just see what strength support for me is. You know, we'll see what that strength is or what that weakness is. But I'm still going to move towards creating a party and coming back into the next federal election, hopefully with a full slate of candidates. I think that because I went to jail and I've endured what I've endured, and I did it for the Canadian people, I think a lot of people see that. And they just completely disregard what the mainstream media has been trying to project. You know what I mean? That bad image of me. And they even said that, they said that I created a blueprint for the genocide of the Jews, they said. Really? a blueprint. Wow. It's a technical drawing, you know. That's
right.
Pretty detailed. I must have went from, you know, A to B, and I'm not going to go through the points, so I can imagine what they might be. But, you know, if people find out, well, we think we know about the Talmud, I'll say it like that, because they always say it's, you know, these phrases have been misinterpreted and things like that, even if it is from a scholar of Hebrew, you know, from a university or, a Talmudical scholar that tells us these things. So, but basically, I think that maybe someone else has a blueprint for genocide of other people, and it wasn't me, you know, and I told people about this, and they brought that up in court. I brought that part up in court about what some of the things they say to us, right, about even the best of the goyim must be killed, things like that. I mentioned those things in court, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't think the jury really cared. I don't know if they even believed me. But that, to me, is a blueprint for genocide and a few other things that they say, if I'm correct, and I do believe I am. But, you know, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but I believe the people that's claimed to be, you know. And anyway, I'll leave it at that. I got, you know, I've got another year to go from off my
probation. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point, though, that they accuse you of doing what they are in actuality doing, which is the classic technique of that type of parasite. It's just, it's so infuriating, and it's embarrassing that the normies in Canada and the normies in the United States just can't see through it. And in fact, you know, it's been my opinion for quite a while that the European legacy whites have such an over, you know, it's like a metaphor of an individual who only does curls with their barbells, right? So they got these big guns and the rest of them are real skinny. And that's what the whites are these days in the first world. They care so much and their hearts are so big and can't we all just get along? And, you know, we're all humanity's just, you know, that's such a naive and simplistic view of the world, which is so inappropriate, especially these days. And yet you can't point it out to them that, look, your empathy, your sympathy is being used against you to destroy your children, to sterilize your children. So you have no generational legacy anymore. And they're like, oh no, but if we can just bring the Africans here, they deserve a chance. And the Muslims, they're just good people, which everyone knows the history of the so-called religion of peace is to gain a foothold and then outbreed the host country. And pretty soon, you know, we're all given the option either convert to Islam or die. And so I don't know. You know, I feel a lot of embarrassment for my fellow whites in many ways. So your thoughts?
Well, during COVID, we saw that big time. Yeah, it was just amazing what, like, white people were telling me, like, during the COVID, put a mask on. That. Oh, you're going to kill everybody. You're not vaccinated. I'm just looking. I'm like, wow, really? You know what I mean? It's amazing. I always knew like-mindedness was an important quality in people, but COVID just rammed that, you know, that just, wow. You know, repetition's the best teacher. And during COVID, time and time again, I encountered that same thing. I mean, sure, I ran into people that weren't white and they said the same things too, but 70% of Canada is white and so many people fell for it. I was very disappointed. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought if there is such a thing as white supremacy, geez, I don't even know what that is. It surely, you know, must have disappeared during COVID because the intelligence level of people is just like you know, it was pretty low. We're talking sub-Saharan African, you know, brains, you know, from white people, from, you know, German, Finnish backgrounds, Hungarian, whatever else. Just not in tune with what was going on at all. They had no street smarts whatsoever. I'm not talking stupid people now, like on a general level. I'm sure they can do mathematics, and I'm sure they, you know, they play their part in society. They go and they do their jobs every day. But when it came to some of the bigger things, wow, politically, these people were they were completely undefended. You know what I mean? They had no idea what they were talking about. And yep. They're parroting words that they heard on the news. And it was shocking to me that the people just didn't stop this in the first month. I even said, I'd like to see military intervention after the first month or two of it all. I thought, you know, this is the time for it. When something like this is going on, and the result of inaction was a lot of dead Canadians from vaccines, right? Never mind
tragic.
Never mind the suicide rate that went up because of the whole thing, right? All the despair. So a lot of people lost their lives. This is a war, and then, like I said, all the things that I said in that video or those videos that I made, they all happened pretty much after COVID, and I had that in my mind when I was speaking. I was a little bit bombastic, perhaps you could say it. I'm not sure if that's the right word to describe it, but I wasn't speaking very calmly all the time. Sometimes I was, but a lot of the time I'd just be yelling at the camera, trying to get market share of the viewers on the internet, trying to be an exciting guy to people and trying to tell them about things that are very, very important for them to know. And anyhow, that's I got convicted on my acting ability, that's for sure.
So, you know, Zach has had remarkable success on Twitter and social media. I mean, some of his posts have gotten millions of views, which is just impressive. So do you have a strategy in place? I'll turn it over to Zach to create a Twitter presence for a kinder, gentler, less Bori.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we try to appeal to people through avenues like social media and attempt to gain... We need to look towards the youth, right? As Leslie just mentioned, a lot of people will parrot things that they hear from others. They're just going to kind of go with the flow of what is popular, right? We see it with anti-Semitism rising on Twitter, right? Anti-Semitism being, you know, whatever they want to call it, just critiquing Israel or talking about Jewish power, whatever the case may be. Now that many people are talking about it, it's becoming more of a comfortable field. And I think the same goes for politics. You know, when you get into the political field, being on social media and kind of pushing a platform or a message in a place like this politically can really be a good way to push yourself towards people, if that makes sense. I apologize. I'm having a little bit of a brain fart. I'm not articulating myself very well at the moment.
That's all right. Well, let's turn it over to Les for a second. Les, do you have any plans to use Twitter, which appears to be on the surface the one platform where you can discuss the Jewish problem?
Ironically, I'm going to avoid the Jewish problem for a while, and I'm just going to focus on the symptoms that I see arising from any kind of consolidation of power that we don't want, right? So that's how I'm going to appeal to the public. And then when they look at my record and all these news articles, they can see where, you know, where these things came from. And then that'll kind of steer them to that issue. But because of my convictions, literal convictions, like legal convictions, I'll have to steer clear of the issue. I don't want to get, convicted as a two-time offender in this.
Oh, of course, right.
Yeah, but I'd also like to steer Canadians out of the danger zone. You know what I mean? So all I can do really right now is just rely on their news articles to highlight one aspect of the fight, which is what they're doing for me. It's nice of them to do that, by the way. I've got millions of dollars worth of publicity from them. And also I'd like to, on my own, start to steer the nation towards the right, in the right economic direction. And that's to get rid of the certainty of failure in our economy, get rid of interest rates, get rid of taxation, lower inflation, lower the price of fuel in Canada, things like this. So I'd really like to start our economic recovery with the conditions that businesses need to flourish. And then we can start bringing back industries and then start protecting those industries with price controls on products that are imported, be it through tariffs or just basic price controls, to make sure that the Canadian goods never have to outcompete a foreigner. Now, we have a pretty good relationship with America and our economies are fairly the same. So I think that we might be able to offer, and I'd like to do this, is to offer American goods on par with Canadian ones, because we can come up, we can rise together. And I want to see American businesses do well, you know, as well, not just Canadian ones. We don't want to be by ourselves. Hopefully we can be a good economic example to America, and then they'll demand that their leaders, no matter who runs them, will do what they tell them to do, and to install a interest-free banking system that backs currency with labor to replace taxation in America as well. So we'll see what we can do. So we can do
that's
a lot of
great. Now, one way, you know, the whole kinder, gentler thing is to be able to appeal to people without, you know, naming any type of villain, but just say, you know, hold their actions accountable. Like, do you really want to be locked down again by some questionable pandemic? Do you really want your rights to express yourself in free speech? We used to be able to speak freely, you know, and do you have any plans to hit it that way and tap that popular anger at this globalist suppression of the individual's rights in Canada?
Most certainly. Instead of calling them Jews, I'll be calling them globalists from now on, and Zionists and things like that.
There you go.
That's what I'll be doing. Like, because it involves not just Jews, but it involves others as well.
Of course.
Without the others, they could multiply their force and have, you know, Masonic police arrest us and do things to us, right? With their violent ways and, you know, their terrorism. So, yeah, I'd like to definitely try to invite more people into our cause by speaking a bit more generally of all things. And I kind of have to now, so I've been forced to do it. It's kind of a shame, but maybe it's for the better. We might be able to go even further by kind of being more vague of all things, believe it or not. You'll notice that political parties win elections by being very non-specific about what they're going to do.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
it's really interesting. Like, if people don't have a set bullseye to attack them on or at, it's hard to attack the political party. So if they're very vague, what's there to argue? You know what I mean? They say some happy, feel-good kind of thing, and basically like a process answer of some sort they give a reporter, and that's it. Like in Canada, Trudeau said something about sunny ways, and I'll explain a little parable or a little bit of a story about that phrase. Wilfrid Laurier, back in the day, was a prime minister, and he was fighting a campaign. And there was some kind of an issue about the French schools in Ontario, and it had to do with the Protestant and Catholic backgrounds of Canada, which were the two predominantly European religions that came into Canada. Although they're both Christian, they're still different, right? So there was an issue. And so Laurier didn't know what to say, because any answer he would have gave would have been the wrong answer. It's one of those ones where, you know, you're done. You can't answer it, because you're going to disappoint half of the people at least, right? Or the half of the people, I would think. So what he said was, he said, the sun and the wind had a contest. And this is the way he answered the question.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a contest about who could make the man take his coat off first. Well, so the wind says, okay, well, I'm going to blow really hard. And this guy's, you know, I'm going to blow the coat right off of this guy, right? So the wind blows very hard, and the guy grabbed his coat even tighter. So he's not going to win that, you know, that challenge. The wind was not going to win. And then the sun says, well, I'm just going to shine on this guy nicely and make it nice and warm, and which the sun did do. And then the man decided to take the coat off himself. You know what I mean? And then the parable of the story is, or the lesson, the moral of the story is, we're going to do things sunny ways. So that was Wilfrid Laurier's answer. And also Justin Trudeau used that, just the phrase, without going into the story. Sunny ways. It sounds so nice. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
So he answered the question without answering the question. He gave a process answer. And that's all these political parties do right now. They make you feel good about things, you know, America, Jesus, you know, whatever else, beer, you know, whatever they like. And then, yeah, you get the big cheer. It was in a couple of movies, too. I think the campaign with Will Ferrell, it was in that movie as well. And this is what they do. They call it a few words. People cheer for them like Muppets, and it's over. You know what I mean? And nothing's changed. The New World Order gets their way. They get their people installed no matter who votes, by the way. So, you know, that's how it works out. People always lose if they don't have people running for them that are pushing their interests. You have to have a guy in the end zone to catch your pass.
Right.
The public that's a quarterback can't, you know, find someone in the end zone and hit him with a pass. It's going to be an incomplete pass every time, and the globalists are going to win every time.
That's a really great point. Now, what's your read of Canadians on a spectrum of, you know, the left side of the spectrum is really welcome the globalist one world government, one world religion types versus fiercely proud Canadian nationalistic, you know, Canada first types. Where do you think Canada is these days as far as the voting public?
Excuse me. Well, I think Canadians don't know they're voting for globalists when they vote for these big parties. You know,
really?
Pierre Poilievre is trying to paint himself as the anti-WAF guy, but he's definitely a WEF stooge, if you ask me. You know, you can see by his track record in the past. I believe he supported the Paris Accord. You know, he was quite willing to tax the air with Stephen Harper when they're going to bring in their cap and trade carbon tax. You know, they complain about Trudeau's carbon tax. It's the same thing. I mean, you know, whether the public pays for it directly or they pay for it directly through a corporation when they raise their prices because their overhead went up. Either way, the Canadian people are going to pay to breathe. They're paying for the air, right? And that's what Pierre Poilievre wanted to do as well. So people need to know that no matter who they vote for, it's going to be the same person. That's just the bottom line, right? And that's it. It's a show. I mean, they think that they're patriotic. If you come up with some Canadian and tell them, oh, you're not patriotic or whatever else, I mean, some people might not care, but the majority of people might be offended and think they are patriotic and they're patriots and they're doing what's best for the country. Even though when they go to vote at election time, they're condoning all these bad things that are done to us, including the next lockdown instead of forced vaccinations. Not one party ever voted to lock us down. You know, they might say, oh, it came up in the middle of an election. Well, you know, they all seem to follow the same lockstep orders from the New World Order when that happened. All the parties did, every one of them.
Right.
All you've included. So there are no heroes in Parliament right now, as far as I know.
Well, that's a great point. In fact, if you look at 2020, when it was the control of the Rothschild banking empire that shut the world down, not the World Economic Forum. But still, the fact that they could get every country to basically in the first world to lock its citizenry down, when any medical professional knows that you do not lock down the healthy people, you isolate the elderly and the sick and the infirm to protect them from the pathogen, and then you let the normal healthy people go about their business and create herd immunity, right? So everybody gets a mild form of the pathogen as opposed to, you know, locking people down and injecting them with, which was not even a vaccine. It was gene therapy, you know, which, well, everybody knows what a farce that was. And now we're seeing turbo cancers and we're seeing people, morticians pulling out these 3 foot long, rubbery, white, bizarre looking, clots from corpses. And, you know, the truth is coming out and the normies are understanding the truth. I think that's why the globalists are having such an incredible tough time of getting any traction with bird flu as the next global pandemic, even though they've been injecting all types of cattle and chickens and livestock with these poisons for years, trying to get it to jump zoonotically and infect a few humans, and it's just not working. And so I'm wondering, can you use that as a platform to remind people of just how horrible that was, and it's time for politicians like Les Borey, who champion the people and their freedoms economically, freedom of speech, freedom of health choices, yada yada.
That's a good point. I'm definitely going to remind people that I went to jail opposing the people that killed a lot of our people with those vaccines and locked us down. I was the only person that has gone to jail, as far as I know, from any of the politicians I've ever heard of in Canada. I mean, I haven't heard another politician going to jail for this. I mean, that Bernier guy went for a while, but I think that's just a show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, it's just whatever. But I was the only one that ever broached the topic of bringing these people to justice, as far as I know, as well.
That's,
and I'm
going to
broach that topic again, believe me.
Now, for some reason, screen sharing creates a bad echo, so I'm not going to do it. But I did put across the bottom of the screen that if you go to Money Tree Publishing, just exceptional books. Dave Gahari's imprint is just phenomenal as far as bringing products, books, videos that are professionally edited and increase content. For example, the excellent book, The 6 Million Factor Fiction, with author Peter Winter. His fourth edition had 142 pages, and now 3 years working with Dave, it's up to like over 500 with excellent paid, you know, pictures and everything. So you should really, you owe yourself a favor to go pick up a handful of books at moneytreepublishing.com. You can now pay with crypto, which is very cool. And if you use the code GMAN, G-M-A-N, you save 10% on your entire order. So I think it's a good idea. Why don't you head over and pick up some books to have some new reading material when you're have some free time. So I see Zach is there. I'm not sure if he's ready to participate again. Zach, are you there?
Yes, G, I am here. Can you guys hear me?
Yep. You want to jump in then?
Yes, yes, I do apologize. I had a rather urgent phone call that kind of threw me off there. I was
Hey, life happens, right?
Yes,
no need
I do
to
apologize for that.
No need, no need.
Yeah, so I want to maybe hop back in and ask another question for Leslie. You know, you mentioned wanting to be a little more careful with rhetoric when it comes to the Jewish question, things like this, kind of referring to Zionism, globalism, things like that.
Right.
Do you have intentions of ever moving the bar into the more, I guess we can say radical, but we know it's not exactly radical. It's just kind of common sense. But maybe the more open direction when it comes to these things and being a little more upfront. Once power is maintained, let's say, like once you get to a certain position, let's say you are able to succeed in winning an election. Do you ever plan on bridging these topics to the people in maybe a more overt fashion?
If I become prime minister, you're going to see some things happen, man.
Yeah.
You're going to see some stuff. Let me tell you. The CBC is going to be playing some videos that people wouldn't even imagine seeing on national television in Canada. We're going to spend a lot of money to educate the public and to tell them what we think happened during the war. And also all these other events that happened in the past. They're going to be experts on Jewish communism. They're going to be experts on banking. They're going to be experts, these people of Canada. They're going to be experts on 9/11. They're going to be experts on the USS Liberty. They're going to be experts on the Balfour Declaration. You know, they're going to recognize the signs of communism. We're also going to promote good manners in Canada so that people don't bother each other just because of how we look or whatever else. Instead of making laws against free speech, we're just going to promote good manners. And that's all there is. You see that if we have our nation here and we get control of it, I'd like to undo the harm that I see coming from these foreign players when they try to separate our people, and they'll try to divide us over every line, hair color, you know, whatever else, preference in ice cream, things like this. They don't care. So we have to outdo them with a lot of information to defeat their intentions, which I see will be coming. And also, I'd also like to make sure that we have a good armed forces in Canada too, like a really good armed forces, like unlike anything our country's ever seen before. And I think we're going to need that. And we might be a benefit to America as well to buy you guys some time in the future. If we come out first and someone tries to invade you, we'll try to change our demographic a little bit to remove suspected foreign fighters from our shores, from our land, and make it harder for people to attack America, because we're going to deny them the staging area that's your northern border. We don't want that to happen. It's a pretty wide border. If someone wants to attack you, you're going to have troubles. I don't care how big your army is. It's going to be a problem defending that long border, especially with the millions of people that they brought here that maybe aren't here to be Canadian. All right. So I don't really have any kind of a short list as far as race or anything like that goes as to who's going to go. But I do have an idea that, you know, there's a few countries out there that sent people here for the wrong reasons. And we're going to repatriate those people in good order, too. Nothing's going to happen to them. They're just going to go back.
Wow, yeah. Fantastic. Follow up, Zach?
Yeah, I like that. And I had another question. I was thinking, you have mentioned the Federal Reserve, you know, in the States and kind of banking, central banking systems in general, this paper-backed currency that we're living underneath. What are maybe three main focal points that you want to be attacking against with your political platform, right? So obviously you did mention the banking system, trying to change finance. I would imagine that's one of the main ones. But what are two other, you know, really big things that your platform is going to be super hard against?
Well, culturally, we're going to change in Canada. We're not going to be promoting pedophilia anymore. I'll tell you that right now.
Excellent.
We're going to get rid of abortion, too, as far as using it as a reproductive service. We're not going to do that any longer either. So there's a couple of things there. When we take over the banking system, people need to know that it's going to result in lower house prices as well. Because not only do you control the printing of the money, you also control the debt. And we're going to use that power to benefit the Canadian people by reducing their prices by hundreds of percent, okay? And that's what it needs doing. We're also going to protect new industry in Canada with price controls, maybe in the form of tariffs. But there's no point in putting tariffs on everything coming into Canada if we don't make it, because that just makes things more expensive in Canada for people to buy. We don't want to do that. So in the future, buying a Canadian good that may cost a little bit more than it does today is going to be doing good for your country. It's also voluntary tax, because there will be no income tax of any sort at all in Canada. None. So I want to make people more free. They won't have to answer to the government every year to file an income tax return, and they won't have to renew their licensing, like their licenses for all these different things every year, just for the sake of creating revenue. So people will get lifelong gun licenses, lifelong hunting licenses, lifelong fishing licenses, things like that, you know, simple stuff. I don't even know why we even need a fishing license in Canada, to tell you the truth. Maybe we could associate that with a little education so people won't harvest the wrong kind of fish at the wrong kind of time of year, right? So things like that, and won't take too many numbers. Other than that, I don't see a reason for licensing. It certainly won't be as a source of income, because we won't need that anymore when we take control of our banking system and back currency with labor. So those are a few of the things that I would change. If you've got any suggestions, let me know. Some things might have eluded me during our talk here, so I could always
use I have a question, possible suggestion. In America, there's such a parasitic feeding on hardworking citizens who manage to buy a home, and if they pay off their mortgage, you still have to pay an annual property tax. Is that the same in Canada, or do you have a loyal ownership where once you own it, you own it?
No, you never own a house in Canada. You're always renting it from the municipality, because they always charge you those property taxes. That's another thing. Like I said, no taxation means no taxation, nothing. You buy a house, that's your house until you die, or until you sell it, whatever you want to do with it. That's it.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, no more fooling around.
What's your strategy? One of the most insidious aspects of the last 20, 30 years has been this communist infiltration of education, kindergarten through grade 12, and then, of course, college nonsense. It really has opened up the acceptance of transgenderism, which is just insane, pedophilia. They're trying to shift the Overton window to make all the worst aspects of the Talmud societally accepted, and thus far they're failing. But what's your strategy to rein in communist education in Canada?
Well, number one, we're going to change the curriculum. And number two, we're going to force that new curriculum. And number three, the people that try to enforce the old curriculum and then try to harm our children, we're going to look at those people a little bit too. We'll see what the public says we could do.
Oh, that's excellent. So What are there any other, you know, we're starting to address, based on Zach's excellent questions and mine, we're starting to look at some of the key planks of your platform. What are our other talking points, planks of your platform that we haven't yet addressed, Les, that you'd like to bring up now?
Well, I'd like to give the Canadian people the best health care that money can buy. And that's what I plan on doing if they choose me as their prime minister in the future. We'll back the labor of, we'll back the printing of money with the labor of the doctors. And we're going to pursue medical policies that prevent illnesses. And we're going to get away from this, what some people might call a Talmudic medical system. We want to bring in real wellness for people. And we don't want to slowly do harm to people. We want to see cures. And maybe we'll go and revisit some of those old inventions of the past and see if these things were for real or if they're just some kind of a myth, like the Raymond Royal Rife frequency machine, where it can kill cancer cells, and they can see what kind of a frequency it would take to kill these cancer cells if they could observe the cancer cells while they're alive. And because you can't do that with an electronic microscope, because it'll kill the cancer cells. So he invented a way of observing small organisms and then, doing them in with frequencies, and they could tell what frequency he'd need to use on a patient, things like this. And now if this is the truth, then I'm sure Canadians can make good use of this. And also, we can be a sanctuary for people in the world that want to be free from cancer. We can cure them in Canada and then go home after if they're allowed to come here.
Oh, fantastic. You know, I don't know if I've mentioned, but my midlife career change was I became a doctor of oriental medicine. And for 20 years, I've had a holistic practice with acupuncture, Chinese herbology, and had a master's of science in oriental medicine and a bachelor's of science in Eastern and Western nutrition combined. And there's many, even now sanctioned frequency healing devices. There's a German product. It's a mat or like a joint wrap called the Beamer. There's a new product from the technical guys who created the Beamer, now called Centropix, Centropix, that's even more powerful. There's a brilliant guy, Glenn Streeter. He's been a guest of mine in the past. I haven't had a Glenn on in a while. He operates out of Colorado, and he's got 20 years in the business. There's even things like red light and cold laser therapies that many chiropractors use already. So there's literally millions of people existing now in the United States and Canada who have benefited from frequency healing. And so the Royal, I have spoken with people who have been treated by the Royal Rife technology. In fact, I believe Glenn Streeter carries it, and they swear by it. And it's really amazing stuff. So that's wonderful that you're open to it. And I mean, there's an excellent book by a fella out of the Northwest named Paul Pitchford that is called Healing with Whole Foods. And there's so much you can do if you just control your diet and eliminate all the corporate poisons that, are in. And nobody's talking about less right now. The idea that for the last 20 years, cans of soup and SpaghettiOs have been lined with bisphenol A, which is essentially a powerful estrogen mimic that is kind of like taking a quarter of a birth control pill if you eat enough things that are leached with bisphenol A. And so, combine that with this nightmare of glyphosate by the Sephardic Jews, the Monsatan, Monsanto Corporation and everything with that. I mean, so, if you could create natural farming where the crops are rotated in Canada and you're not using petrochemical, temporary fertilizers, but you get back to shifting crops and the sanity of, knowing which crops to plant where in which season to feed the soil naturally. And I mean, there's so much that could be done. And do you have any thoughts in that regard?
Exactly. That's exactly another point that I would bring up to the Canadian people. I would try to put healthy food on their table. The same thing. Exactly. All those good things, everything that's good, try and do that. Take the fluoride out of the water. How's that? You know, things like that. Just all these little things that are going to make a lot of difference for people. These are huge.
Yep, that's exactly right. You know, the big scam about the fluoride nobody talks about is there is one type of fluoride that is kind of beneficial in your diet, but that's not the fluoride that's going in the water. The fluoride that's going in the water is like lithium will dumb you down, and it's the byproduct of waste from nuclear power plants, which people, if they just do their research, they'd be outraged by what kind of fluoride's going in the water. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't like to roll up their sleeves and come to understand what's actually going on. So Zach, I'll turn it over to you. Where would you like to take things?
Yeah, I actually have an interesting one. Internet regulation, because this is a tough one where globally, these pornography websites, gambling websites, all of these different things that, you know, previously would have been outlawed or basically illegal are just running rampant all over the place. A lot of young men are being just destroyed by these things because it's considered societally acceptable. So they're falling into it and they're taking a look at these things. How would you kind of take an approach towards internet regulation and trying to maybe ban things like pornography, put regulations on things like gambling, attempt to keep young people away from falling into some of these pitfalls?
Well, I think the Canadian, like, if I get elected to be the prime minister, I'd like to start a video sharing platform that's uncensored. And I'd allow whatever people wanted to put on there. I'd encourage open discussion. Also education. There'd be maybe a public education campaign to explain the dangers of pornography and things like that regarding wasting your time and things like that. I'm not going to come at it from a moral point of view. I'm going to come at it from a practical point of view and say you're just making yourself weaker if you just sit in front of this stuff all day instead of doing something practical. Get out there and get some fresh air. Just it's the same harm that sitting in front of a phone all day, typing all day does to people too, right? You want people to get out, interact with each other. You know, a little bit of a recreation is fine. They can look at what they want to do in their own time if they're done their work or whatever it is. But yeah, we don't want to get all of our people addicted on sex and things like this. No, it's not a good thing. It's not a healthy way for people to spend all their day, right? So we definitely want to encourage people not to do those things, just to be aware of the problems. Maybe say, are you watching this much, you know, porn a week? Then maybe you got yourself a little issue, you know what I mean? And maybe remind people that it's not such a good thing to do that all the time. But to make it illegal, no, we wouldn't do that. I think I'd be a champion of free speech, and that's part of it as well, right? But we are going to educate people as to what the pitfalls are. It's kind of like in Germany when you see the young people there drinking liquor and things like this, when they're like, just not even teenagers sometimes at the kitchen table. It's not a big deal to them. But when people in North America turn 21 or turn 18 or 19 or whatever it is where they are, they get all giddy and it's almost like they're immature around the liquor, right? So if you bring people up with certain things, they kind of get used to it, you know. But you don't want to raise people with bad habits either, because that's bad, because then they'll stay with them for the rest of their lives. So a bit of education and some maybe some real world practicality might help people to steer away from that.
That's a great point. You know, one thing, Les, that a lot of people don't understand is how much Canadians love hockey. And that's like their, you know, shared passion. At least it was. I think it's still that way. When I was younger and had my cousins who were rabid Canadians fans living in Montreal. And is there any possibility for you to piggyback something like that, you know, which, I mean – we're talking about now a generational, you know, of all the major professional sports, pro hockey is the one that I really admire because they focus on the family, they focus on community, they focus on, you know, being hard work pays off, and they honor the past greats, you know, all the things that we used to have in the extended family that the globalists have destroyed and flipped the script. So now these 14-year-old social influencers know better than their life-experienced 75-year-old grandparents. It's just insane. But, you know, in hockey, the young people really honor the older people. And do you have any possibility of using that as a metaphor for restoring traditional values to Canada as a whole?
Maybe. I haven't given it much thought. You know what I mean? Like, I try to get people away from watching sports and, like Zach said, the pornography and things like that, right?
Right, right.
So we don't want them to idolize those people. Any angle to change people's minds is a good one, though. If there's already a lot of people watching it, why not piggyback an issue on that? If you have an audience, use it. I don't have any specific plans to do that, but, yeah, it's good to do that. Whenever you can hook into something where there's a lot of people watching, then definitely do it. See, because of what I went through, because of my convictions, we'll say, or my charges or whatever it is, remember, hockey is a big money thing. And wherever there's that big money involved, there's going to be, you know, weasels, right? We'll call them.
Right.
And they're going to try and shun me as the right thing to do because it's bad for, you know, for people that like hockey to associate with people like me. You know what I mean? So there's also that end of things too, where they've got these people by the nose and they just kind of lead them around, right? So they're not
sad, but true.
The most independently thinking people there are.
It's very accurate. You know, one thing I notice a lot myself in personal interactions, especially on Twitter, whereas, you know, I'm constantly spreading mostly political messages. The people that seem to be the most adverse are almost like undying sports fans that have, you know, like a soccer player or something as their profile picture. And all they post about is sports. And it very much has a grasp on our people. You know, I think there is maybe a place for sports. I'm not going to say like sports should just be ruled out of society. That would be kind of egregious, but it's turned into a very like cultish kind of behavior where it consumes people to an extent that it's all that they focus on. And I think that in itself is really dangerous.
Yeah. You got a good point there. I think it would be better to even maybe get rid of pro sports and just promote amateur sports and more deify those people a little bit, but not to the same level, you know, maybe even provide a little bit of funding for some kind of amateur leagues, you know, where they can live with a bit more prestige, we'll say, some of the better players, right? Not too much, just a little bit, and then keep them working in the regular jobs. But to get rid of this this nightmare, this this idol worship of professional sports is just killing us. You know, people are just spending way too much time, and they don't even know what's going on. I found a lot of the sports people were, they're on the wrong side of things. I'll tell you that. Yeah, I agree with that. It's a shame because they're just enjoying a pastime. You know, they don't feel like they're doing any harm, but by them staying ignorant, they're harming us all. We're only as strong as our weakest link, and if our weakest links are pretty like watching sports, then you know, we're in big trouble. So to get rid of the big professional sports entertainment, you know, arenas, it would, I think it would benefit Canadian people quite a bit to do that.
That's a really great point. There's one guy, he's a retired Atlanta Braves pitcher named John Rocker, R-O-C-K-E-R. And that dude is based as anybody. And he posts all the time, ripping, the globalist type. So, there are some sports guys who get it. And yeah, to me, the greatest tragedy is as follows, and I'll let both you guys comment on it. When I was a little boy in the 1960s, I loved reading comic books. My older neighbor had them, and I would go over next door and read his comics. And when I was old enough, I got to buy my first comic when I was like 5 or 6 years old in 1964, 65. And I just loved it, right? But never in a million years as an adult would I spend – 1,000 hours creating a perfect suit in mimicking Iron Man so I can go to a movie premiere and for 1 minute have the actor, that's really cool. And then, oh, he saw me. I feel so great. I mean, that's just so insane. I mean, entertainment is entertainment, but it's another form of addiction for these people now. And I mean, what can we do, in both you guys, to everything these days has this dramatic potential for addiction, and it what didn't used to be that way. I mean, it used to be a comic book or a TV show or a movie was a movie, right? And you went and saw, you know, the Dirty Harry, and it was awesome. Everybody talked about Make My Day in 1970 or whatever, but that was it, right? You didn't like dress like Dirty Harry and carry around a 45 Magnum and what's wrong with people these days? And how do we get them back to the proper focus of family, good health, personal rights, and, you know, natural law, yada, yada. So first Les, then Zach.
Well, they've come at us in every way. They've come at us with chemicals. They've come at us with messaging to change the way people think, you know? So we're going to have to come back at them the same. We're going to have to remove all those harmful chemicals out of the food, all the, you know, the hormone disruptors and the fluorides, and the messaging is going to have to be a little bit different. And also people have to have a life. I know, and I'm not insulting. I mean, literally, they have to be able to. Now, I don't know about the wealth of these people. I don't know if they're affluent or not. They're doing this. But I think a lot of people take part in these things for escapism. Right, to get away from reality. Yeah. Well, if their realities are a little nicer, they won't do drugs as much. They'll enjoy the reality. It'll be their drug. You know, if people can go to work every week and come home and pay their bills and actually be able to put a little bit of money into a bank account and build things and start building a life, they might be less inclined to spend their time wasting their money in harmful ways. So we'll see how a little prosperity and education and promoting a whole different culture, how far these things take us. We'll see.
Your thoughts, Zach?
Yeah, you stole the words right out of my mouth with escapism, because this is what many of these things are. You know, I think there's two components to what G is proposing here with people being so infatuated with movies and entertainment that they're like making their lives revolve around it. Right. And it's a lot like sports. It's the same thing. Like, you know, it's typically a different archetype of a person, maybe a more nerdy type of person. They'll get really into Star Wars and, you know, they're going to conventions and things like this, and they're dressing up like Chewbacca. And, you know, it is an escapism. And I think that comes from like the hardship of modern society. And I will at least give them the benefit of the doubt. It's a better escapism than meth or, you know, being an alcoholic or something.
Right.
So I do at least appreciate that. But I think a lot of the reason that they fall into it so seriously like this is we live in a society that makes everything a trend. You know, everything has to be a trend. And if you're not following with that trend, if you're not following with what's popular, you're meant to feel left out, you know, like you're an outcast in some way. So, you know, like probably when you were younger and movies were coming out, gee, they're, you know, like they would make a little like article in the media about it, like, oh, it's doing good at the box office, you know?
Right.
But now the media doesn't do that. You know, when they want to promote the newest Star Wars movie, they quite literally like show a guy, you know, in a Chewbacca costume, you know, standing at the gate ready to watch the movie as it's, you know, starting live. Right. And they make this like infatuating for people. So people are like, whoa, you know, I want to be a part of something like that. And they almost, again, they build like a culture around entertainment, like a fake fantasy thing somehow creates a culture around it. And this is with Star Wars, sports, comics. I mean, you name it. And they're able to create a culture around anything. And I think this is maybe a larger problem of our people have lost their intrinsic sense of what their traditional cultures are. And it's being replaced with this, you know, modern materialistic consumerist culture.
That's a great, great point. And as a follow-up, Les, and then, of course, Zach can come chime in after, is do you have any intentions of banning the access of 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds to iPhones and tablets, and they just get hooked on it so young? And you know, as opposed to being outside and playing and this whole gaming obsession, do you have any thoughts on some type of regulation for that?
Not really. You know, like they're going to see these things as they get older. So like I said before, with the drinking, example. Maybe it's better that they get used to some things when they're smaller. We have to give them better things to do with their time than to push buttons and talk to people, you know, through the airwaves. I think it'd be better if we, you know, encourage more human interaction between human beings, like in person. Means get-togethers, maybe some kind of sporting event or something, you know, something with a low amount of organization to it. You know, just fun things to do without having to worry about outcomes and things like that, right? On some issues, I do encourage though sports where we keep score and things like that too, so you know people can gauge their success. We don't want to turn this into the old equal opportunity, equal outcome
society. Participation trophies.
We used to get the pin in Canada. I used to get that when I was a little fat kid. I used to get the participation pin. I wouldn't even win the lowest award. I was terrible, even though I played sports. I just, yeah.
Attaboy, Les.
I stuck with her. So that's what it is, yeah. You know, so I think that it doesn't mean that I'm right, but I really do think that we have to give people something better to do than to, you know, stick their heads in an electronic box all day and suck up way, you know, harmful rays of energy and things like this, and to distance themselves from real life. People need to interact and get out there.
That's a great point. Zach, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of this can be done with simple incentives, you know, and not even, you know, like financial incentives, but just social incentives, that the whole participation trophy thing, right? This doesn't incentivize you to be a really good runner or a really good, you know, athlete. If everybody else gets a trophy too, theirs is just a little bit smaller. There's nothing special about that. You know, it doesn't feel the same, like I did it, you know, and then other people seeing that, they envy it and they want to emulate it. They want to be able to reach that level. And that is like a super motivating driving force. And it's being, you know, ripped out of the fabric of society. If we had more people or more incentives for people to do good things or productive things. And again, simple social incentives, you know, it's not even like we have to have like a, you know, government program where we're giving people money for getting first place in the local race or something like that. But just, you know, making people proud of being good at something again, you know, because that seems to be a thing of the past, unfortunately, and it needs a revival.
Well, you know, what's tragic to me, guys, and you may have noticed the same thing is, you know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago, you'd go to a family, you know, big birthday party or an anniversary party. Grandpa and grandma have their 50th anniversary, and everybody, you hadn't seen your cousins for a while. You want to go outside and play or do stuff. But in the last 20 years, you go to these events and you see all these kids on their phones, right? They're not engaging in seeing cousins. They're all just caught up in whatever is going on with their phones and everything. And it's, to me, the lack of basic real world and connection and interaction is debilitating. It's like you've got all these young people who don't know how to go out, ask a girl out on a date, go take her out on a nice date and kind of, you know, court her as you did in the old days. And now they just whine that there's no women run and I'm celibate and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, we used to have a system where you'd get to go and meet people at things like, you know, church fairs or whatever, or high school dances. And it seems like there's no social transitioning from childhood to adulthood anymore in a non-electronic, non-digital way. And do you have any thoughts on helping people return to a type of real world normalcy, Les?
Yeah, just, I don't know. Basically just give things to do. Like there'll be lots of employment. People can go meet people at the workplace instead of staying at home collecting welfare. We're going to try and get rid of that. We got to put people to work, you know, and that's one of those things. Just people taking part in society shouldn't be that hard to arrange. I mean, like, we're all human beings. I think there's got to be something in our DNA that likes, you know, that makes us seek out others. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you walk by someone, you're going to want to say hi to them and things like that. So if it's in our DNA, we just have to find a key to, you know, to unlock that, that character trait and capitalize on it and make it happen more. Now, I don't know how to do that apart from maybe putting money in people's pockets so that have more time to like do other things because they won't have to work as much and things like this, right? And then with more disposable income, they'll be maybe a little bit more confident as well. Maybe they'll go out and ask that girl for a date, you know, because they know they have a car now and they can go and take her for a ride somewhere and, you know, they can go enjoy something, or the girl can pick up the guy or whatever. I don't care. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. As long as people are together enjoying each other's company, that's what I think should happen. That, like I said, to make that happen economically, there might be a bit of a thing we can do with that. And culturally, definitely even encourage people to see each other and talk to each other and discuss things and not be afraid of what other people say. And just maybe even encourage polite disagreement. Do you know what I mean? To soften the blow for these snowflakes when they come out, and then someone laughs at them because they believe in something that nobody else believes, right?
Right. So,
and even for guys like us, I mean, it would be good for us as well. Don't want to give us a hard time for not believing the things that they believe in. We can have discussions. Polite discussions would be good to encourage.
Yeah. That's a great point. As a quick follow-up, then I'll turn it over to Zach, is back in the day, you know, there were real ethical owners of businesses. For example, one of the most famous ones was KB Toys in the 70s and 80s. They used to be in all the malls, and the owner was just a decent guy, hands-on, and he made sure that every loyal employee got, you know, stock ownership, and you know, he made millionaires out of his loyal people, and every worker had that opportunity. And so there was this loyalty, this drive to work harder. And then sadly, the parasite, shit Romney, oh, I said that wrong. Mitt Romney, you know, was a venture capitalist, and they did a hostile takeover, and they gutted the wealth of the company, stole it all like the parasites they are. And all the retirement of all these people became worthless. So you have step one, which is labor as the currency. But do you have any plans to encourage a loyal employee ownership so there isn't this still this insane control in the hands of a few, because these corporate titans own everything?
I do have some thoughts on that. I don't want to have to, or as an employer will say, you don't want to have to give people raises every single year to keep them interested in working. There should be a limit, because there's only so much that you can pay someone after a while to, you know, ensure profitability. So what you could do is, once they reach the wage ceiling, maybe introduce some kind of a profit sharing with these people.
Sure.
So that they're always taking a percentage of it, and whatever there is, the owner gets his percentage and the workers get their percentage. And that would be a good way to do things. Obviously voluntary, you know, I mean, they can all voluntary, and people will work for the best employers, and the market will take care of itself at that point.
Excellent. We're coming up to the end of the show. So Zach, any final questions or thoughts, and then please promote all your excellent shows.
I'll just kind of tag on to what Leslie was saying a little earlier, you know, finance being kind of a crux of these things. We were talking about the social issues where men aren't courting women and things of that nature. I think one of the biggest problems that we have that causes probably the greatest social strife is the fact that both figures in the household need to work in the modern age. Right. I think this creates like a really big problem, and you know, having a better financial system would certainly fix that. You know, where only the man in the household would have to work, because I've never met a woman that's in her 30s or 40s or 50s that has chose the working life, that is a happy individual. It's I mean, they're far and few in between.
Right.
It's really just not a natural life for them. And you know, additionally, the time that you get to spend together when one has to work and you have different shifts, and you know, maybe you only get to hang out on Tuesdays and Saturdays because the way your shifts work and things like this, it's very complicated, and I think that causes a lot of strife in the family environment. So I think that's a big aspect that would be definitely solved with the financial situation being fixed. I don't know if we are concluding. If not, I'll kind of turn it back to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're 3 minutes from the top of the hour, so why don't you promote all your stuff, Zach?
Okay, yeah, sure. So for those listening, you guys can follow me on Twitter. That's my biggest platform at the moment, or X, whatever you would like to call it. It's a Logos Revealed I on X. All of my other live streams and everything else I do is in the bio. There's a little link in the description there. You can just click on that link. It's bio.site/LogosRevealed, and that'll bring you to my Rumble channel, Odyssey, FTJ, the whole nine yards. I'm on everything. So you guys can follow me there. That's everything for me.
Well, I'm going to give Les the final word, other than saying thanks, everybody, for another great week of shows. And thank you, Always Honest, for the very generous donations. All the hosts put in a lot of time and hours. And during live shows, you go to the upper right-hand corner of the chat, and there's a little green box that with a dollar sign on it allows you to, once you set up an account with FTJ, you can fill your wallet and donate to the hosts you like. And if they're not live, you just click on one of their videos and get it playing, and then underneath will be that same green box. And I'm convinced now that I'm throwing the full weight of the Giuseppe Vaffangulo media empire behind Les for election. And I am personally going to Canada. I will vote several hundred times for you, Les.
Appreciate that. Thanks, man. But I like what Zach said. It is one of my platform points that didn't mention is to bring back the single income family. Hopefully the two parent single income family. It's he's absolutely correct. It's a huge point. Huge, massive. And that would undo a lot of harm for future generations.
It really would.
If we can keep families together because they're not bickering over money, and they'll have more time to spend with each other too. If Ma gets to stay home, or Dad, or I don't care who does it, to tell you the truth, as long as the children are well taken care of and parents love each other, then we're good to go.
That's fantastic. And in all seriousness, anybody in Canada, vote for Les, support Les. And Les, I'm outraged to hear that those traitors are coming after you again. And if there's anything that we at FTJ can do to support you, you know we will. And look forward to having you on regularly, especially once you've got your account set up and you can start to take donations. We got to really grow your war chest, because the sad fact is you have money, then you can buy media spots and all that. That's just how the game is played. So, again, yeah, thank you, Les, and you're a real hero. And I can't believe they're coming after you again, but you will triumph, because you are in the right and you're speaking the truth. And these literal demons, all they can do is try to wield fear and harass real heroes like yourself, like Monica Schaefer, like Alfred Schaefer, who, by the way, is going to be our guest Monday. He likes Statutory Paul, so he wants to come and engage with him. So don't forget to tune in Monday, and Alfred will be our guest. And so I'm sure there's going to be plenty of Les Burry appearances in the days ahead. And once he has his website up, we'll all donate. And with that, everybody have a great weekend. Thank you so much, Zach. Thank you so much, Les. Thank you, viewers. There was a weird little technical glitch, so we couldn't do the two-screen thing today, but I'm sure that'll all get ironed out by next week. Have a great weekend, and we'll see. Oh, don't forget, tune in. Zach's coming on in probably an hour. Flood's doing show tonight. Davis Lerman, Nick from Night Nation Review, and there's new hosts coming on all the time. So don't forget to tune into other shows and support FTJ. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye for now.